Okay, so we did leave. We did the 17th over in the sixth form block. That was one of the things that was interesting for me coming in today, was to look at the new roof, because of course we had to be over there to see, and I'm not sure it looks any different, but I'm sure it's drier and safer. Would that be right? Yes, good. and then we took off on the 18th and flew to Melbourne, and which was fantastic. Never been to Melbourne before, so that was a brilliant just couple of days. The only kind of thing with Melbourne was that on the second day we were there, we walked outside of the hotel and it was 37 degrees, and it was like walking into a furnace, literally. It was windy, just a hot, dry wind, and you kind of just felt yourself go like this and think, okay, I want a cold drink and shade immediately. And then from there we flew to Tasmania, and Tasmania for me was celebrating our 30th wedding anniversary. Figured we made it and we needed to do a big celebration of it. So, yeah, we deserve something important. So, Tassie had been sort of something for years. People had sort of said various things, and I thought, I want to go there one day. And, of course, it's something you've got to plan to do that. So it is an incredible place. It is absolutely beautiful. And I can see Tim shaking his head, because he did get into some serious competition about beaches in St Kitts, where they were, and Tasmania. And I'm just saying that the beaches in Australia, Tim, were so good, I couldn't even post them up. They were just so good. And Tasmania, spectacular, spectacular beaches. Freezing, but the water was cold, although Daniel did swim in almost everything he could find. So, and I went in once, so I got my hero badge on. And just incredible. And the big quest was to see Tasmanian devils, and God came through for Tasmanian devils. So we were on an island that is particularly kind of like has an animal island, and I said to the Lord, "Are we going to see them?" And He said, "Just wait, you will." Okay. So we were. They're incredibly black. I wish Chris was here, because he would enjoy this bit. But they're incredibly black with sort of white spots, and they've got this kind of particular lollipy kind of walk. They're quite big. They're bigger than what you think they are, and Daniel was like, we walked over this hill, and he goes, "I think that's one," and it was. And we chased after this thing. Anyway, you know, I mean, there was nothing subtle about, you know, us going through the bushes looking for this devil. Anyway, we did see one. And then we saw another one, and the people we were with, they took off and went off into this other direction. And God said to me, "You're going to see one more." And this one we saw, we literally, where Daniel is, that's how close I was to this thing. It was going around a tree, and it was like, these things are so rare, and they're protected on this island. And here am I, and, you know, apart from him going, posing for photographs, I mean, it was just incredible watching him. So it was like, thank you, Lord, that has just made my day. And we got to see my friend Tania, who is from New Zealand. She was our bridesmaid. We actually got to see her in a place called Devonport. Brilliant, fantastic. Had a great time in Tasmania. And then we flew into Sydney and had a couple of days with friends. And then our friend Beth arrived. Oh, that's Daniel's fire. So Daniel is a big fire. If you don't know, fire starter, you know. Twisted fire starter. He is. That's him. He is. Wherever. And we were doing free camping. So this is just down this great big long road, dirt road. And I think there was fishing down there at some point. And then, yeah, it was just brilliant. We were just in our little camper van. And which, you know, by the end of 12 days, we were quite sad to say goodbye to, you know, to become quite a good friend. Is there another one? Another? Okay. So then we flew to Sydney. Beth arrived. Back to who? Oh, okay, what's the other one? What's the other Tassie one? Oh, there's none. Oh, okay, so Sydney, going on to Sydney. Yes? Yeah. Oh, yes. So this is, you know, Opera House, Harbour Bridge. And Beth said, I want to take you guys out on a cruise. So we went on this 7-course Penfolds wine, which is a cruise, 4-hour cruise around Sydney Harbour. The reason it looks like this is because of the smoke. So these are the fires. So it was just very hazy. But, you know, we've started already. Little glass of Prosecco there just to start the trip. And it was incredible. I've never done anything like that in my life. It was like, you know, although I think I might be made for it, you know, kind of thought, yeah. It was very nice. And it was great having Beth there. And then the next couple of days, the kids arrived. So, and then we had a couple of days more in Sydney with our friends doing... Daniel went, if you don't know, there's a very, very famous swimming pool at Bondi called, and the people who swim in it are called the Bondi Icebergs. Daniel did a swim in the... We all did a swim, except for Campbell. That boy's got no meat on him to keep himself warm. So we all did a swim in the Bondi Iceberg pool. And yeah, it was brilliant. And then we drove up, we hired a car and drove up the east coast of Australia, visiting various relatives, and then eventually stopping at a place called Grafton, which is where Northern Rivers, New South Wales, which is where I was born. And we had a couple of days on the coast. I grew up in a tiny, tiny little fishing village called Woolai, and we had a couple of days there. And then we drove on up, again, seeing relatives in Brisbane, and then up to the Sunshine Coast, which is in southeast Queensland. And we had an Airbnb, and Beth spent a week with us, and we went to Australia Zoo, so Steve Irwin, we did all that, which, if you're going to go there, is a very cool place, actually. I was very impressed with it, but, you know, we all had a really good time. And she got to hold a koala and get a photograph taken. And then she went, and... then we were really straight into Christmas. And for me, the greatest joy was that all my family made a really big effort to be there. So I have a nephew who's a policeman, so he only had 2 days off. And he and his pregnant wife decided they were going to be with us. And then I have a nephew who works in the mines, and he only had 1 day off. He only had Christmas Day off and had to travel to back to the mines on Boxing Day. And my dad, and he's 85 and alive still. So, and it was just fantastic having, that's never going to happen again. So, you know, and I hadn't had that for 20 years. And it was just, you know, I got to see, my niece is pregnant, and her baby will be born in February, and I got to see her pregnant, and just a brilliant, you know, it was just a brilliant window of time. And, you know, we only had a few hours together, and then they all went back home. So, you know, I was just incredibly grateful to God. And, you know, I have this picture, which, you know, and the experiences of it, but, you know, for me is worth $1 million, you know, that picture. And then we continued to just, when everybody went back, we continued to go and visit my dad. And he did have another stint in hospital, and try and get in as much swimming. And Ella and Campbell took out skateboards, so they tried to perfect their skateboarding. I'm not sure if that happened too much, but anyway. And, yeah, just try and have a holiday, really, and relax. But, you know, the sort of the issues with Dad are kind of ongoing, and he's in a nursing home that he's not particularly happy about being in, and that all that throws up. And then we had New Year's Eve and Ella's birthday on the 4th of January. So we did her birthday when she was 4 years old. And then, you know, for this 25th, we thought it was quite nice to be able to stay. So we had a great day recreating some of the things that she'd done on her birthday. We went to this big tourist thing called the Big Pineapple, and we actually drove past the hospital where the kids were born right at the time when she would have been being born, which was quite funny. And then it was just, you know, just a really great opportunity, and I am very grateful to that God put it all together for me, and, you know, sort of, yeah.
It's important that the song that we sung just as we finished there, you say, I've done this before and done pretty badly in getting the words. You know, I keep, this is obviously specific to an individual. I keep finding voices in my mind that say I'm not enough. We all are fighting voices in every scenario that want to say something that isn't the truth, that is trying to imprint itself on us. And then, you know, then the chorus comes in, that you say I'm loved when I can't feel a thing. You say I'm strong when I'm weak. And all the way through this song, it speaks about the importance of what God says about us, what we need to hear from him, getting his perspective on things. And as we start this year and we kick off and we look at what we're going to do and where we're going to focus this year, this really kind of sums it up, you know. The only thing that matters is everything you think of me. In you I find my worth, in you I find my identity. If you can find your value in God, and if you can find your identity in God, then you are set. Your value and your identity together equal dignity. They give you your dignity. If you know who you are and you know that you're worth something, then nothing can shake you. It's when voices come in and say that you're not worth that, or they challenge your identity. And that's what we see through the scriptures, and we see how Jesus overcame it. And I believe that this year we want to, he wants to equip us in a new way for us to overcome those voices as well. So I'm going to pray, and then I should put my glasses on. On holiday, I don't need glasses. I mean, generally, I don't need glasses. I can see you, and I can see most things. But for this, I kind of do. So let me pray, and I'll magic up my glasses. Father, I thank you that you want to speak to us afresh, that you want to remind us today of the things you have said to us, the things that we know are true and that we won't let go and let fall to the ground. And Father, for some of us, you want to speak some new truths. You want to tell us something new and something fresh. You want to give us a perspective. You want to drop onto and into our world something that will change the way we look, change the way we think, change the atmosphere in our world. And so, Father, I pray today that you'd open our hearts and our minds to hear from you, Holy Spirit, that we would be able to let go of things that are not true, however convincing they seem. And, Father, you would enable us to align ourselves with what you see and how you see it. In Jesus' name. Amen. So, 2020. First of all, I'm going to give you a tip, which I saw on the internet. Very, very, very good tip. When you're signing the date, which you've probably all done, but I've only just started, you know, the 2nd of the 1st or the 3rd of the 1st, you'd normally abbreviate it to 20, rather, you know, you just put the last thing. If you do that, people can sneakily put a number after it, like 2018, and then backdate what you've just signed. Oh, do you see what I mean? I thought that was quite useful. So from now on, I'm writing 2020 at the end of every date so that I don't get caught out. So that's just a free tip. Boom, straight off. You know? I'm here to serve. Yeah. Okay, so what are we doing this year? Where are we going? What are we focused on? What direction are we going in? We are going to be a little bit more systematic this year. We are going to go through a series of teachings which will go over the whole year, and we will probably repeat them and work on them. We're going to be a bit more in-depth, and it's going to be a bit more methodical. Some of you are saying, this is great. This is finally, at last, what I've always wanted. All of this random, not knowing what's going on. Every week it's different. Others of you are thinking, oh, that sounds a little bit like school, and I'm not sure I want any of that. I put rigorous at the end of that, you know? Ooh. Rigorous means we've tested it, we've sought it, we've worked it, we've chewed it over. If you rigorous, you know, if you're rigorous, you're making an effort to get to grips with something, to see it and to understand it. And there's lots of other definitions of that. So It's important, I mean, what you think, what you believe, what you wonder, what your perception of yourself and what you're here to do, you know, it has an effect. I often ask people, and particularly I like asking church people and sometimes church leaders, what's the point? What's the goal of Christianity? Why are we here? What is our assignment here on earth? And you get lots of different perceptions. So the first part of the year, we're going to talk about what our assignment is. Why we're here, what's it all about, what is God's call on our life, what does that mean, today in the prayer meeting, Zina was talking about understanding and knowing that she as an individual carrying Jesus and being connected to him could change the atmosphere of a particular place, could walk in and change the way people were feeling and thinking. That is a revelation that Zina has, that she knows, that changes the way she looks at the world around her. And rather than being pressed into its mold and going in and going, oh, it's gloomy in this cafe, isn't it? Well, I better get with the program and become gloomy. She's saying, no, I'm not going to get with the program. Greater is he that is in me that's in this cafe, and I'm going to make a difference, and I'm going to be a light, and I'm going to be salt, and I'm going to be positive, and I'm going to be upbeat, and suddenly at the end of it, something's changed. That comes from a thought. That comes from an understanding. That comes from knowing your value and your worth and your identity, and that comes from God. So we're going to look at a bit of that. We're going to look at baptism, but we're going to have an in-depth look at baptism. We're going to look at what is the difference between John's baptism and Jesus's baptism. Why was John the Baptist baptizing people? Why did Jesus feel the need to get baptized? Why did you get baptized? What did people tell you when you got baptized? So it's quite interesting. We're going to have an in-depth look at that, and hopefully at that time also, as we get that revelation, I think we'll get people who want to be baptized, and maybe some people who want to get baptized because the first baptism that they maybe had was not quite what they thought it was. So we're going to have an in-depth look at baptism, and then towards the end of the year, we're going to look at what it means to put some of these things into practice. How do you take what you know of who you are and what God's called you to and start applying it to people around you and to the communities that you're in? And also a greater look at the connection between you and God. We're taking communion at the end of this service, and communion with God, communing with God will be an important theme. So if you've been clever and taking notes, you'll notice that is A, B, C. Assignment, baptism, community. Those are the things we are going to go over this year, the ABCs of what it really means to be a Christian, to be a believer. And these things will, if you know them, they are already a foundation in your life. If you don't know them, then they will shore up everything that will be built upon it. If you don't know some of these things, it is impossible, not just difficult, it is impossible to build above that. If the foundation is constantly crumbling, if your theological foundation is constantly weak and at in danger of being assailed by someone else, if someone else can come in and start saying things and you say, well, I don't know, I'm not sure what I believe, then you're not going to be able, God's not going to be able to build above that, because you will be constantly at the mercy of that thing. Another way of describing it is sometimes people say, you know, it doesn't matter how high, if you've got a barrel and you've got staves of a barrel, it doesn't matter how high one stave is in the air, you will only be able to fill that barrel to the level of the lowest stave. Otherwise, the liquid will come out. And so this is a kind of an exercise over this particular year as well, to just make sure that we have got a solid, solid foundation. Light, this is a paraphrase of Colossians 3, light always dispels darkness effortlessly. A renewed mind conquers the space that was previously occupied by worthless pursuits and habits. Let me read that again. Light dispels darkness effortlessly. A renewed mind conquers the space that was previously occupied by worthless pursuits and habits. When we get God's perspective into every situation of our life, just as a light dispels darkness, that revelation will effortlessly recorrect our thinking and refocus what it is that life is all about. So what is our assignment? Let's have a think about that, and let's see how we can look at our thinking and see what shapes it. We're a kind of product of our environments. Where we are in the UK culture, I've told you before that Australia is very different from the UK. We speak English, but or barely, and as I said, there's lots more swearing. So I'm trying to kind of keep it clean for you today. It was quite funny actually, because we were telling Beth all about these Australianisms, and she was texting groups of people in Australia, in America, who were asking her, was she on fire, and, you know, how things were going. There's a toad in Australia called a cane toad, and it exudes a poison on the back, which in small doses has a sort of LSD effect. So there are groups of people who lick cane toads. Now, I told her this. She completely did. Oh, that doesn't happen. She Googled it. Oh, you're right, you know. And after a while, we were just being silly in the car. She sent this text to her friends in Australia, which was full of swearing, full of licking cane toads. They thought she'd gone completely mad. We just thought she was finally becoming a little bit more Australian. So the culture that you're in has an effect on you. It changes you. You don't even know until you're not in that culture anymore. Your family has an effect on you. Everyone's family is normal until you meet another family. Then you realize, well, they're not very normal. They're not like us at all. Ben and Anne, who are over here from Australia and will be speaking again next week, Anne's family love to walk. And so, consequently, Anne loves to walk. So every time you suggest, what should we do? Anne's solution is, let's go for a walk. No. No. I mean, no. We went to Tasmania. Someone said, oh, you've got to go to Cradle Mountain. Oh, okay, so we go to Cradle Mountain. And the person at the front says, so what walks were you thinking of doing? I said, well, I'm not thinking of doing any walks. And she looked, stared at me with disbelief. You know, why have you come here if you're not going to go? I said, is it kind of a legal requirement that I have to do a walk if I'm here? And so she was so shocked, she sort of went on to persuade me, well, this one's only 10 minutes and this one's only 10 minutes. We walked out. It was snowing. It was freezing cold. And there were people who'd done these walks who were like zombies. They were in kind of those one-pound ponchos, you know, you get at festivals that are completely useless. They were shivering. And I'm thinking, this is an advert for walking around. There wasn't anyone who looked like they were enjoying walking at all. So anyway, your family shape you. If you're part of the Pemberton family, then you love playing games and winning at games and crushing the opposition at games and so on and so forth. you know at Christmas traditions, everything, those things shape you. Your experiences growing up have shaped you. There's that statement, give me a child before they're seven and I'll show you the man. Show me. You know, what it's essentially saying is that in these formative years, in these early stages, you are being shaped, even if you don't know you're being shaped. I mean, you need to pray for the little kids who are going off to school. It's great that Jesse's going up to True Colours, but every new experience is an opportunity also for them to be, for the little people around you to be crushed, and you can't do anything about it. Sadly, sorry, traumatizing. Yeah, but that is the reality. You know, we love our kids unconditionally, hopefully, and we give them a wonderful environment, and they go to school, and they're not. Not everyone thinks they're wonderful. Not everyone thinks everything they do is brilliant. And, it's a harsh environment that shapes us. Romans 12 says, do not be conformed by this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. So we have to find a way to counteract the pressures that are around us, that are seeking to squeeze us into a mold that we behave like everyone else, so that we can be transformed, to change the environment, to go into places, to go into these, to shine like stars, to be different. It's not as black and white as it sounds. I don't know about you, but this time of the year, you get endless Facebook posts, kind of inspirational New Year Facebook posts. I mean, yeah. So someone sent me one from Denzel Washington. Now, I like Denzel. I like every film he's been in. You know, he's a great... I like Denzel. But he started with this sort of inspirational stuff about God. And I like the fact that he believes in God. But amongst the things that he was thanking God for, there were things that were troubling me. So he said, I thank God that he's led me. And I thank God, I wrote them all down actually. I wasn't planning to use them this morning. He's blessed me. He's shaped me. He's taught me. But then he went on to say, he's punished me. And I thought, that is going to be a weakness in the life of Denzel. Because at some point, that opens up an avenue for saying, this is happening to you because God's punishing you for what you've done. And you hear it all around you. I don't know what I've done, but God's, you know. And Christians can take it and make it sound, slightly different. Our Christian tradition will shape us. So if you God is just, you know, shaping me and teaching me. And what you're saying is, he is doing this bad stuff to me. And it becomes corrosive, because at the same time when you're singing, God, you're there for me. And, you know, if you take Tanya's word this morning about God wanting to be there and equip you, yes, but he might be there to punish me, and I'm not quite sure. Now, I'm not judging Denzel. A lot of what he said was great, but I just thought in the midst of some of the things you know to be true is a glitch, is a flaw, is a little missed beat that is going to come around. I can honestly say I have never felt that anything in my life has been God punishing me. Well, yeah, but thank you to my parents for the traditions they gave me. Thank you to my churches that I've sat in. Thank you to the theology that I've been brought up with. But at no point when someone says God's punishing me, it doesn't even enter my mind to agree with them. No, he's not. do bad things happen to me? Do challenging things happen to me? When I came out of Tasmania, out of the West Coast, where there was no signal, I realized I'd missed two emails that said that my credit card had expired and I should pay for my accommodation, my Airbnb. And then the third email, which said, because you haven't paid for your Airbnb, we've cancelled your accommodation. And don't worry, we've refunded you all the money, but goodbye. Now, it was traumatic. I was not at my best. I was not nice to be around. I was losing the plot. But at no point did I think, God, why are you doing this to me? What have I done wrong? You know, did I do something wrong on this journey that you have to do this? That was never in my thinking. My thinking was, God, how are you going to help me get out of this situation? Because that's my belief, that God is always there to turn every situation for our good, to work with us, to change. But if you've got somewhere at the end, if you got somewhere in your thinking, well, God's punishing me, then why would you go for him for help? Is it a punishment, or is it, you know, well, why? So you realize that these little foxes spoil a vine. Amongst everything that you believe that is good, there can be something in there that just needs to be rooted out. And that's why we want to be a bit more rigorous about what we're doing, to make sure and just to confirm that we do believe in and get our thinking aligned with him. Jesus came to reveal the Father. If you love Jesus and you quite like Jesus and you get on with Jesus, but you struggle with the Father, then you've missed the gospel. Because Jesus said to the disciples at the end, when they said, show us the Father, he said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. So if you've got a theology or a thought that in some way in the Trinity, the Father is slightly more angry, slightly more, he's not really the one you want to have spend any time with, but you don't mind Jesus, then you've got to think about it. This is the verse that we're going to concentrate on over the next short while. It's going to be the key passage, and I think at the end of it, hopefully, we will know something more about what God wants for us and our assignment for this year. It's Romans 8, verses 28 to 31. I'll read the whole thing, and then we'll come back and have a quick look at some of those other things. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. For those God foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the likeness of his Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brothers. And those he predestined, he also called. Those he called, he also justified. Those he justified, he also glorified. What then shall we say in response to this? If God is for us, who can be against us? That is a good passage. You get extra points if you learn the whole thing off by heart. But I commend it to you to actually say, start thinking, and we're going to start thinking about these things. So verse 28 says, and we know. Well, do we? And we know. Hopefully by the end of the time we'll be able to say, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him. Even that translation, even that line could throw a doubt into you. Do I love him enough for him to be working for my good? Those who love him, he's only working for those who love him, and maybe I don't love him enough. And when I don't love him, and when I haven't done the things that I think he should say, maybe he stops working on my behalf. Maybe that's something that God needs to change in your mind. It says, who have been called according to his purpose. Do you know that you are called? Do you know what you are called into? I believe that we are called, and the assignment of Christianity is that we are called into a relationship with God. And that is it. Everything else that flows out of that, and there are activities and things, they come as a result of a relationship with God. It's funny. I'm going to throw Werther's under the bus. Sorry, Pete. But you tweeted something this week. Often Werther's, if you follow them on Twitter, I think. Is it Kate who's responsible for the thing? Someone is. But it talked about, it gave a list of how long people had waited for things. It said, if you're waiting for something, don't worry. Other people waited for things. And then it went on to say, Abraham waited for this many years and Jesus waited for this many years. I'm not going to get the phone out. Funnily enough, subtly when I read it, I thought, I understand that. Those people did wait. But what it also kind of said is, the only time those people were worth anything was when they started doing some stuff. Up until that point, they weren't doing anything. And then when finally they started doing, then that was when, you know, we remember them. Well, that's not what the Bible says. Jesus said, and we'll look at it, his baptism. The Father said, this is my Son in whom I'm well pleased. At this point, this is at his baptism. He's done nothing. So if you think that your calling is to do something for God, then let me suggest that we take that down and have a look at it and unpack it and see whether it actually is what God is asking you to. I'm not saying there aren't times when God asks people to do things, but if you're getting your value and your worth and your identity from doing something for God, then you're going to be in trouble. I had a conversation with a friend from another church. I was asking them about someone else, and they said, oh yes, they've gone off I said, how are they doing at their new church? Oh, they're doing great. They've got everyone, they've started to get everyone doing stuff. And I didn't bite my tongue long enough, and I said, is that the point, is it? And they were quite indignant. Yes, of course it is. You know, we're here to do stuff. And I said, oh, okay, well, I disagree. I said, you know, we're here to have a relationship with God and relationship with other people. That might involve some of that, but the culture around you can twist you into doing your stuff for God. There's a great t-shirt, you know, Jesus is coming back, look busy. But that kind of is it. I've already had one person, I'm walking across Cleveland. How are you doing? Are you busy? As though busyness in some way is the mark of actually, you know, worthwhile. They did a survey just recently. They did it in America and they did it in Italy. And they talked about two people, one person who worked really, really, really hard and one person who didn't have to work very hard at all, only did a little bit of work. And then they asked them which person was the highest status. And in the US, the person who worked very hard must have had an important job and therefore they needed to work really hard because they were very important. And in Italy, the person who worked very hard was the poor person, because they didn't have a good job, so they needed to work a lot of the time. And the person who worked the least hours was the person with the highest status. So you see how we can be shaped. We can have our thinking slightly twisted. As I looked at this, who have been called according to his purpose. So I thought, well, what is his purpose? What does that word mean? And I started looking into it. The Greek for that word is prethesis. It's something that God preordained for you. It's something that he has called you back into. It's something that was his original design for you. And then as I looked deeper, interestingly enough, that word also means, and these are the things with the original language, it also is used when they're talking about shewbread. Now, yeah, exactly. What? What's that? Well, if you go back into the Old Testament and you go back into the law and Leviticus, in Leviticus 24, it says, take fine flour and bake 12 loaves of bread using 2/10 of an ephah for each loaf. Set them in two rows, 6 in each row on the table of pure gold before the Lord. Along each row, put some pure incense as a memorial portion to represent the bread and to be an offering made to the Lord. This bread is to be set out before the Lord regularly, Sabbath after Sabbath. Everything that you read in that Old Testament has a shadow. It's a foreshadowing, and it's a recommitment. The Bible says what you see in the earthly tabernacle is actually what's meant in the heavenly tabernacle. So why 12 loaves of bread constantly in the presence of God? Well, they represent the 12 tribes of Israel. They represent God's original design, which is that everyone should be in his presence, that we should be perpetually in his presence. The fall and what we know about the beginning of time and the beginning of the Bible meant that couldn't happen. But God wanted to represent it by that bread and say, you know what? Every time you think of this, think of me wanting you in my presence. Then you see Jesus say, you know, when you pray, pray like this. Give us today our daily bread. Jesus is known as the bread of life. It those things all tangle together. So when we look at according to his purpose, we find out that his purpose for us is to be connected. His purpose for us is to have a relationship. His purpose for us is to constantly be in his presence and be connected to him. And if this year is going to change for you, then and for me, then I know that it's going to be a focus on how do I consciously remain connected to God. Shoe bread or presence bread, designed to be in the presence of God continually. That's what you and I were designed to be. You and I were designed to be in the presence of God continually. And one final thought, just before we take communion. When you hear in the garden, when Adam and Eve fell, when they disconnected from God, it says that God came into the garden and his normal practice was to walk and connect with them. And the words that he said are not, it's funny because I thought about this of parents. If you know your child's doing something naughty and you know they've gone quiet, you know that thing, parents, where it's too quiet in here. What's the first thing you say? What are you doing? What are you doing? With a little... But God didn't say that. He said, where are you? Actually, he knew that that there was a disconnection. And there was a yearning in his heart. Now, you have to read tone into that. And that's what you can't do with a written word. Some of you might think God came with a loud voice and said, where are you? In a stern, loud voice, where are you? Or did he come in with a loving, soft, compassionate voice of saying, where are you? What's gone on? You know, when someone is completely out of sorts and their head is spinning, you often say, where are you at? Where are you? You know, God's heart, we are designed to live in his presence. Everything that we experience in not living in his presence and living disconnected from him is a malfunction of sorts. And rather than cope with that, God has made a way so that we can reconnect and that we can live a different life. And that is the life we're going to explore over this year, so that hopefully you're equipped not only for yourself, but for others, that you can help others see that God is for them and he's for you.